This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello everybody, my name is Bo Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And we've got another fantastic show for you today. Ryan, who are we speaking with?
Today we're speaking with Ruth Nasrullah. Ruth is an Advanced Communicator Bronze and Advanced Leader Bronze. She's Secretary/Treasurer of the Speakers R Us Club in Houston, Texas, and she serves as the 2013 and 2014 Area P6 Governor in District 56. And Ruth has penned an article in the December 2013 issue of the Toastmaster magazine called The Eyes Have It. Ruth, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thanks,
welcome, Ruth.
Ruth, we obviously enjoyed your article quite a bit. That's why we're speaking with you here today. You started your article off with a reference to the 2008 U.S. vice presidential debate.
Yes.
In which Republican candidate Sarah Palin had quite a few winks for the camera. And that brought back some memories. I remember watching that. Mm-hmm. But I also noticed as I read your article that you didn't quite come right out and say if her use of the wink was well done or not. Maybe to avoid appearing biased one way or another. But I'd really like to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, and I actually wondered if I was going to seem biased at all in the way I wrote about it, and hopefully it didn't come across that way. I think that it depends on, of course, which way you want to sway someone. I think that she did a great job. She had had some not very successful interviews prior to that, and I felt that she did very well in that debate, and I think the winking was part of what she did. It was a lot of winking, though. And I think that she presented an image that I think she wanted to one group of people, but she did maybe come off looking a little bit too much to others.
Right. Right. I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, that was a great non-answer.
My best.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, as I read your article, I probably spent a good, 20-30 minutes contemplating the wink. Just thinking of the whole phenomenon of winking. It's not really an expression or a gesture that I personally employ. And to me, when someone winks, I find it to be a very kind of almost like a private, I guess intimate is a better word, kind of an intimate glance. Mm-hmm. And there, I jotted down a list of different things that I think a wink can communicate. But before I even talk about any of that, how widely used is the wink, around the world?
Yeah, that depends. And it's one of the things I touched on in the article is it really depends on the culture that you're in. For example, as I mentioned in the article, in some of the East Asian cultures, a wink probably wouldn't come off very well because even just the eye contact, direct eye contact, has some cultural implications. Mm-hmm. So there, I would say, is a good number of people who wouldn't wink at all. But mm-hmm. I think that in our culture, it's something that can mean a few different things. As you mentioned, it can kind of be something a little bit intimate. It can also be something where you're, as Sarah Palin did, trying to give an impression of being sort of, you know, homie, it's just you and us, that sort of thing.
Right.
So it really depends. And I think in the U.S., it probably is more of a, you know, sort of we're in this together kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. We should put on, too, that it's very situational. For example, if I'm out to dinner with my wife and the waitress comes by, I don't want to give her a wink.
Exactly.
Yeah. Unless I want to sleep on the couch.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Although you might want to give your wife a wink. And I think that's one of the... I think the expert in facial body language, I quoted her in the article as saying that a wink can be something that is sort of saying, yeah, I'm with you on this.
Mm-hmm. So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for fun, if you guys don't mind, I'm going to rattle off a few of the different kind of messages, if you will, that I think winks convey. And if you have any others you want to add. But I'll say, first of all, I think often I see the wink kind of as something that's almost done in secret, meaning there are oftentimes a lot of other people involved, but the wink is given when no one else is looking, right? Mm-hmm. But some of the things that I see are, this is repeating what you said a bit as well, but I understand you, I'm on your side, I get what you're saying, I get your point or your special reference that no one else in the room appreciated the way that you and I did. And of course, I'm romantically interested in you or attracted to you. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the ones that popped into mind for me, but anyway, I don't want to, I guess, belabor the wink. There are lots of other things the eyes can do.
Right.
But let's talk on this concept of eye contact not being as welcome in some cultures as it is here in the United States. What's that? How does that work? For example, in the workplace, say if you work for a company in Asia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the women that I spoke to for this article said that she had a little bit of a shock when she started working in, I believe it was Japan, and her supervisor wouldn't look her in the face. And she, of course, took that as a, you know, a real insult, but actually it was a sign of respect. So that's something that it takes a little while to learn, I think. And also, in some Muslim cultures, there's, you know, a sort of between the gender, they would try to not make eye contact. So that sort of thing you'll find, it's just the kind of cultural thing that you need to learn as you go along.
Right. You know, what I wondered about that, Ruth, is how does that apply, say, in the boardroom when there's a meeting around the table or someone's presenting from stage or in front of a group? Would the speaker be expected to not make direct eye contact with the audience, or is this more of a one-on-one type
situation?
Yeah,
or just in a public speaking situation in general.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. The speaker should be prepared. They should know what the, you know, as with any public speaking, you should know your room, know your audience, and be prepared before you get up there. So I think whatever situation it is that you're going into, if it's the boardroom and you're expected, either you're running the meeting or you're expected to give a good presentation, you need to know who's there and what their sensibilities might be.
Okay. Well, let's bring it to the bring it back to the States for now for a moment. In terms of eye contact in a speech, we've all heard some of the rumors about how you should be looking above everybody's head. Mm-hmm. Instead of actually making eye contact
at the exit sign in the back of the room.
Yeah, at your watch. Now, what in your opinion is the ideal strategy for eye contact for a speech?
I like what one of the people I interviewed said, which is look at each person for no more than 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good idea, because sometimes when you get a little nervous or off track, you'll start staring at someone.
Yeah.
And without realizing it. And, you know, it's hard, especially if it's the one person in the room that you really appreciate. They're smiling at you. You feel that they're really supportive. Mm-hmm. So what I tend to do is you kind of do a sweep across the room. So you're not staring at any one person. You're not staring at any group of people. And it also, that gives you the opportunity to see how the audience is reacting as well. So I agree with the person I interviewed, not more than 5 seconds on any individual, and just look at everybody.
Right. Mm-hmm. Ryan, I don't know if you've noticed this, but in our meeting, we have several speakers who favor one side of the room.
That comes up a lot in evaluations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That always comes up, like just one specific area. And the side of the room is pretty small. I mean, there's only a handful of people on each side. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of common, where people will get stuck to, maybe not to a necessary to a certain person, but to a certain zone of the audience? And how do you feel the rest of the audience, how do you feel they would respond to something like that?
Well, there's one thing that I found in my own speaking, and I see it reflected in other people's. The audience, very often you look at them and they look like they're not paying attention, or they look like they're upset with what you're saying. And a lot of the time they are listening intently, but they just don't look that way. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if you're a little bit nervous, you focus on that person who actually is looking a little friendly, but remind yourself that everyone is there to listen to you speak. Everyone is there to encourage you, and they're happy to see you speaking.
Right. And I think we could put ourselves in the role of the audience member as well and think about when we're experiencing a speech or presentation and the speaker makes eye contact with us. How does that make us feel? And I would say from personal experience, it definitely makes me feel more engaged. And if I happen to be zoning out, I zone back in and I'm drawn into the speech. So I think that's a great suggestion. If you can zoom in on everybody and get as many people as you can, make some eye contact with them, not staying in any one spot, I think you'll be able to connect with the majority of your audience that way.
Absolutely.
Good point. Ruth, you quote from Matthew Arnold Stern.
Yes.
In your article, he has a suggestion for a way to prepare or develop your speeches that will make them more conducive to eye contact. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Yes, actually, he is a wonderful speaker. I was so happy that I was able to talk with him. And I think if I recall, he was the one who talked about the stalker stare, which is something that you definitely want to avoid. And that's sort of what we were just talking about, that you don't want to kind of zoom in on just one person and stare at them. And he had, I think he might have actually also been the person who gave the 5-second rule, not to look at anyone more for longer than that. But what he talked about that was really of use, I thought, is to look at different groups, you know, sort of one at a time and not any particular person. But again, as I said, to kind of sweep across the room. And he's sort of an expert on table topics as well. So I was really happy to have the opportunity to talk to him about the things that he does in his speaking.
Right. Yeah, I noticed he also refers to if your speech is in an outline rather than writing it out word for word and memorizing it. That might facilitate more eye contact as well, because you're not trying to remember exact words, but you can kind of, I guess, get more into the message. Do you think that's what he's getting at there?
I think that works for people who work well with outlines. I think that for myself, I'd probably do better the other way, because I would be trying to focus on the outline while trying to remember to look at people and all the other things that go with public speaking. But, you know, he mentioned that he's an outline person, so whatever works.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's one important point to make or to remake is that, well, when we're learning public speaking, we're learning a lot of these different techniques, which takes our focus off of the delivery of the speech or off the speech itself. And what we're really supposed to be doing is communicating the message to the audience. And when everybody's, I would hope that everybody has delivered a speech where they got in that zone, when you just completely forget that you're there and you're just talking and delivering and it feels great. And at the end, everybody claps and everybody loves you and gives you hugs and kisses and flowers and it's the best. But when you're, when you are focusing on eye contact and speaking, your focus is on you again. And that could be risky. So it is kind of a dilemma there.
Yeah, there's also this aspect that you reference here with you call it the tech-driven culture, with people in audiences with their noses in smartphones and laptops and iPads. So often we think of eye contact as something that the speaker needs to do to engage the audience, but there's an additional challenge there now. When I've been to lots of conferences where I wonder what it's like to be the speaker on the stage with nobody looking at you in the entire room. So, do you have any ideas for coping with that phenomenon?
Yeah, and actually that does go both ways, because I've noticed some more and more speakers are now reading their speech from their iPhone or from their smartphone.
Right.
It really kind of drives me a little bit crazy. But I think, so you're saying if you look out to the audience and they're all on their devices.
Right.
I think you have to shout really loud and say, look at me, get off your devices. Because I think that actually that's something that, as I mentioned, it is something that's becoming pervasive in our culture, and I don't think it's a good thing for interpersonal communication or for public speaking. And there's not really, again, unless you really say to someone, you know, get off that smartphone and listen to me, I don't think there's really anything you can do, because when people get in onto those devices, you know, they take off with them.
Well, it can be exacerbated too with some of these tech conferences where it's sort of expected that people are going to be live tweeting and, you know, doing posts, and they'll even have sort of a running, you know, the tweets using the hashtag for the conference projected alongside the stage.
Yeah, everybody's so involved in seeing their own tweets up there.
Right.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. You start to wonder, are they even listening to me at all? Or it's not even so much are they listening to me, but, you know, how much of your message is actually getting broken up by the tweets? And is the fact that people are using hashtags rather than listening sort of organically to what you're saying can be one of the dangers of that sort of, you know, live tweeting.
Right.
I could see that definitely for a good opportunity to use humor to get everybody's attention. Like you pull out your phone and you tweet, nobody's listening to me while I'm
That's
speaking.
Great idea.
Right.
And have that come up.
That is a good idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things you could do to get the message across without appearing like a jerk or very authoritative in that situation.
Great. Well, Ruth, lots of food for thought here in the realm of eye contact and expressiveness of the eyes. Appreciate you joining our show today to share a little bit about this topic. And where can our listeners go to learn more about you and what you're up to?
Okay, just my name, www.ruthnasrula.com.
Great. And you want to spell that last name out for our listeners?
Yes, I will. It's Ruth Nasrula, N-A-S-R-U-L-L-A-H.
Fantastic.
Great.
Ruth Nasrula, thank you so much for joining the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.